you doing? All right. Good afternoon. I'm going to be talking about the role of structural barriers in risky sexual behavior, victimization, and readiness to change HIV and STI-related risk behavior among transgender women. And I apologize, my voice has disappeared about 3 weeks ago. If you've seen it, please let me know. I don't know if it's ever coming back, but we'll get through this together. I'm sure this is not your first CDC presentation, so you know that the findings and conclusions in this presentation are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Basically, they said you're on your own. I said, okay. I don't have any relationships to disclose, and I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge my co-authors who are at CDC, as well as University of New York, LaGuardia, and Hunter College. And this was funded by the CDC as a cooperative agreement funded to Hunter College, City University of New York. Let's just jump right in. So if you are familiar with the literature on transgender persons, then you are aware that there appears to be a lack of uniform data collection on HIV infection among transgender people in the United States. However, individual health departments and locales have done some of their own surveillance work, and the reporting of infection rates among this population, primarily by local health departments, suggests that there are high rates of HIV infection among transgender women, with an estimated infection rate of somewhere between 12 and 28%. According to one report out of the California Health Department, HIV diagnoses among transgender women transgender persons occurs at a higher rate than other groups at risk for HIV, and that includes men who have sex with men, as well as partners, serodiscordant partners of people living with HIV. In the U.S., transgender women can face great risk for HIV risk, as you may know, because of things like social oppression, marginalization, and discrimination. Among transgender women newly diagnosed, for example, in New York City, 51% had documentation of homelessness, incarceration, and sexual abuse, and that was compared to 31% of non-transgender persons who were newly diagnosed. So that just gives you an example of some of the marginalization experiences that they encounter. Some psychosocial challenges associated with this marginalization may result in poor outcomes with regards to education, employment, and housing, as you can imagine. These issues can impact personal resources that are available for these individuals' basic needs, like food and transportation. So as a result, transgender women often report significant levels of stress, lack of social support, and these are associated with a reduced likelihood to engage in health protective behaviors. So just trying to paint a story, if you will, for the context for the risk that we are observing. So as you may know, numerous HIV prevention efforts have been employed to combat HIV infection and transmission. And the field of HIV has experienced recently a shift where, in addition to behavioral approaches, we're now seeing the adoption of biomedical approaches, which include PrEP, PEP, as well as linkage and retention and engagement of HIV positive persons in care as a way to reduce the infection and the community viral load. However, the promotion of uptake of these interventions may be impeded by the structural barriers that transgender persons, particularly transgender women, experience. For example, lack of transportation, food, employment, access to medical care, and adequate clothing and housing are all things that may get in the way of individuals prioritizing their sexual health because they have more competing demands for some of these basic needs. So while discrimination, stress, stigma, and social support are important, they have been looked at in the literature. They do not fully account for the presumably high rate of infection among transgender women. So it is necessary that we explore how structural barriers are associated with transgender women's reporting of things like high-risk sexual behaviors, readiness to change HIV-related risk behavior, and their verbal, physical, and sexual abuse experiences. The current study will examine these associations among a sample of urban transgender women, and we predict that structural barriers will be associated with an increased number of condomless anal sex partners and victimization, and be associated with a decreased readiness to change HIV-STI-related risk behaviors. We believe that understanding the role that these structural barriers play in increasing risk of infection and transmission can inform HIV prevention efforts for this vulnerable and this hard-to-reach population. So this is a small study. It was actually a CDC-funded pilot test of an HIV risk reduction intervention for transgender women. And the eligibility criteria included self-identifying as a transgender woman, reporting being 18 years of age or older, and engaging in oral or anal sex with a man in the past 3 months. Data was collected between November 2007 and April 2008 from transgender women recruited from various New York City venues, including bars, house balls, ASOs, and street outreach. Approximately 48% of the women in this study self-reported being HIV positive, and 52% reported being HIV negative. This is all based on self-report. So our primary independent variable of interest in this study is structural barriers. Participants were asked, during the past 3 months, how often would you say that you have had problems with transportation, finding a safe place to hang out or sleep, food, getting medical care, getting a job, and getting adequate clothing. There were three dependent variables in this study, which include readiness to change HIV-STI-related risk behavior, which includes abstinence, mutual monogamy, safer sex condom use, and silicone hormone drug injection use. Second and third dependent variables were victimization, both lifetime and recent, and by recent we mean in the past 3 months. And participants responded to questions that assessed verbal and emotional abuse, physical abuse, as well as sexual abuse. And then finally, we also assessed recent risky sexual behavior, which is the number of main, casual, and trade partners that they engage in condomless, insertive, or receptive anal sex in the past 3 months. So separate hierarchical linear multiple regression analyses tested the association between structural barriers and number of condomless anal sex partners, lifetime victimization, and recent victimization, while controlling for demographics that have been established in the literature to affect these outcome variables, namely age, income, and education. A fourth and final hierarchical linear multiple regression analysis was also conducted to test the association between structural barriers and readiness to change HIV-related risk behavior while controlling for demographics and other factors related to motivation to change risk behaviors, which include stress, stigma, and social support. And those are listed here as just as a reminder that the focus was on the independent contribution of structural barriers beyond some of these covariates. So we did look at perceived transgender-related stigma, perceived transgender-related stigma concealment, perceived social support, transgender-related stress, and stress-related growth. And there are some examples of what those items look like. So here is a table of some of the descriptive characteristics for this sample of 63 transgender women. The mean age for this sample of 63 transgender women was 38 years, and women ranged in age from 18 to 59. The majority, 81%, of the participants self-identified as Hispanic or non-Hispanic African American. More than half reported having completed high school or earning a general equivalency degree. Only 19% reported full or part-time employment. 54% reported an annual income of less than $10,000. And more than three-fourths of this sample reported having ever been incarcerated, where 21% reported having been incarcerated in the past 3 months. So this gives you some context in describing this sample. Among all the sociodemographic characteristics detailed in this table, and this table continues on the next slide, there was only a significant difference in mean age. So HIV positive women were on average 41 years old, and HIV negative women on average were 35 years old. And that was the only significant difference between these two groups. Continuing with some more descriptives, a majority reported experiencing at least one structural barrier. So 78% reported experiencing at least one structural barrier, including a lack of employment, 48%, and transportation, 35%. There was not a significant mean difference in structural barriers between HIV negative and HIV positive individuals, which is important to note. All transgender women in the sample reported ever having experienced verbal and sexual victimization. So there was not one person in this study who did not report some form of victimization. And a majority, 87%, reported also experiencing lifetime physical victimization, and two-thirds reported having experienced sexual victimization in the past 3 months. Again, no significant differences between HIV positive and negative women for any of these descriptive characteristics with the exception of age. In the past 3 months, on average, HIV negative and positive transgender women reported having engaged in condomless anal sex with 2.4 and 3.3 partners. That includes main, casual, and trade. Oh goodness, I have 5 minutes. I'm moving along. All right, so tables 2 and 3 reflect the hierarchical linear multiple regression analyses for lifetime and recent victimization, whereas approximately 7% of variance in lifetime and recent victimization was explained by demographic predictors. By adding structural barriers, an additional 21% of the variance in lifetime victimization, an additional 41% of the variance in recent victimization was explained. So adding structural barriers improved the fit of this model for recent and lifetime victimization. Similarly, while only 1% of the variance explained in number of condoms anal sex was attributed to demographic factors, when you add structural barriers, that increased the fit of the model, providing an additional 19% of explained variance for number of condoms anal sex. And it just continues on with our final outcome, which is readiness to change HIV-STI-related risk behaviors. So when you look at all the covariates, they together explain 21% of the variance, but then when you add structural barriers, we have an additional 10% of the variance explained, so the fit of the model is better, and the total explained variance is 31%. This group of transgender women, as I said, experienced a great deal of victimization and structural barriers. As I said, all of them reported some type of abuse. Structural barriers were associated with recent and lifetime victimization, increased numbers of male partners with whom they had condomless anal sex, and included sex partners, exchange sex partners. Both groups were similar with respect to all of these different variables. So, whereas you might expect HIV positive and HIV negative individuals to look different, these women were actually reporting similar experiences. They were, in effect, the same. HIV prevention, of course, should include the importance of condom use, reducing your number of condomless anal sex partners, and the advantages of all these biomedical interventions that we are now seeing as having an effect on HIV transmission and infection. However, they should not be void of a focus on structural barriers. 78% of the transgender women in this study experienced one or more structural barriers. So interventions really need to include structural barriers like access to food and employment, housing, et cetera, adequate medical care. So I'm gonna have to skip through some of this. I'll take my time here.
You have 10 minutes.
Okay. Oh, I should be all right. Biomedical and other prevention modalities may fail because individuals may have to prioritize their basic needs over your HIV prevention intervention. You want them to do all these things, that's great, but they're like, okay, but I have child care, I can't get to the doctor, things like that. And as you can see, the majority of the sample was an ethnic minority sample, and so they may need structural level interventions that attend to these needs prior to or in concert with the HIV prevention intervention that you are maybe the focus of your programming. Lack of transportation directly affects access to care for HIV positive transgender women in particular, so hence structural barriers like lack of transportation can indirectly affect their medication adherence. The individual and community level viral load suppression, as you know, if they can't adhere to their medication, then their viral load is high, and so the people that they interact with sexually is a part of their community, and so the community viral load can increase as well. And then, of course, morbidity, mortality, and other health outcomes are affected. Training, of course, is also needed beyond just the individuals. Training is needed for those who are in the helping profession. So cultural competency of providers to improve patient-provider interactions among HIV negative and positive transgender women. And then my limitations are pretty self-explanatory. It's a cross-sectional data set, retrospective self-report data. However, we did utilize ACASTI to try to circumvent some of that. And this was a small convenient sample, which suggests that we have limited generalizability. Thank you.